You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We are on the air. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Big day yesterday with the presidential press conference. I'm not sure what's more interesting, the press conference or my Facebook feed since then. I think I'm going to have to go with the latter because, wow, lots of conversation, lots of discussion, lots of interesting perspectives out there. I want to talk about that. Also talking about the discernment between false reports and fake news. There's always, and I assure you, I was sitting at I am on the board. Yes, it's a board meeting, not a conference. I was sitting on the at a board meeting for Catholic Charities and my diocese yesterday, recounting the experiences that I had 16 years ago, with the reports that were coming out on September 11th, 2001. You got to have some discernment before you rip and read, as we called it back in the day on pulling news off the wire. You've always got to discern that, because reports are just reports. And they can come in all over the place with all kinds of differing degrees of authenticity. So we'll talk about that in light of a news story that the AP broke regarding the roundup of illegal immigrants. We'll talk about all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. So, interesting conversations over the past 24 hours on Facebook since, probably hasn't quite 24 hours, but the past day or so. That, of course, since the fallout of the press conference yesterday with the president, calling kind of this impromptu, last minute, whatever, spur of the moment, probably a better way of saying it. I wanted to get out there and present to the press that everything is good, that there's not chaos, there's not the challenges that seem to be indicated along the way, that everything is on the up and up and nothing to worry about here. Which, for me, as a journalist, if that's what we would have heard, if that would have been the message, and hey, we're here to make America great again, you heard me talk about this, here's how you sell this thing, right? Stick to the base, stick to the principles. But unfortunately, I think that Trump is aware that his base is distrustful of the media. So therefore, he's going to continue to push those buttons. And to say to a room full of journalists, you are all dishonest people. And I think that's a direct quote. Don't hold me to that. Don't quote me on that. But something to the nature of, all of you here are dishonest. Now, that may have been all of you in this room, or it could have been you are all dishonest people, meaning if you're in the media, you're immediately dishonest. Now, I get, as he says, that approval ratings are worse for journalists or worse for the media than Congress, which isn't true. But there's already distrust of media. But if we're going to continue this barrage of attack on credibility, on journalistic credibility, that's a problem. It's already a problem that we've got Brian Williams out there doing what he's done, saying one thing and doing another and falsifying stuff. Yeah, I can't even begin to express the emphasis we placed on ethics Now, granted, I know this would be a good report. I would like to see this. Percentage of educated journalists, percentage who are actually working in journalism. My guess is it's probably about 20%, right? My guess is that a lot of those who have ended up in journalism either fell into it or they found their way into it or they just decided they had some sort of passion for this and they began doing it. They hung out a shingle, as we used to say in college, that you start up your own company and you decide you're going to do something. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know what it is, how it is that we've come to this, but I promise you this. I promise you this. 30 years ago, my time of college, in a very important time of formation, I was drilled ethics. It was the, as I've said before, above writing style, right? Above your broadcast performance, which was important. Ethics. You don't trick anyone into believing something. You don't use the power of the media to manipulate. You make sure that you have the story straight before you report it. You protect your sources. You indicate to anyone that you are going to quote them and you ask for permission for the quote. Can I quote you on that, sir? Because that seems to be important. When you put quotations around something in print, you got permission for that. Highly ethical and professional and disciplined. That's what you've got to understand. To me, this is why this is so personal, right? This is why it makes me crazy. Because I've dedicated my life to media. This has been what I studied. This has been what I've done. And when I see my industry, my entire industry, again, was it the people in the room or was it to the whole industry? And I've been criticized. Well, Leo, he said that he liked some media like Fox and Friends Morning Show. Okay, what was that? Some kind of promotion? Do you have stock in that company? What is that? That particular program? But to say to an entire industry, you are all dishonest people, that's a problem. That's a problem coming from the president. If it's Donald Trump, the eccentric businessman, billionaire, I don't care. He's concocted crazy stuff. The whole birther thing, crazy stuff. That doesn't matter. But when you've got the responsibility as a president and you're going to use that power as an opportunity to discredit an entire industry, and this is what I asked on Facebook, insert your profession here. And what if the president was talking about you like this? And I'm not talking about legislation that hurts your industry. I get that. I know there's been plenty of that. Regardless, I mean, you name the industry, you're probably going to find something that has put a damper on what you're doing. It's happened to the broadcast industry. Believe me. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a president out of his mouth saying to your industry, Congress has got a higher approval rating and everybody hates them and you are dishonest people. Tell me how that would sit with you. Shepard Smith of Fox News. I applaud him. I'm generally not a Fox News fan. I'm not crazy about saying you're fair and balanced and not being, which is generally the case. They skew pretty conservative, and I don't mind skew conservative. Be a WorldNet Daily. Be a Breitbart. Be a Drudge or The Blaze. Any of these. They all skew right. I read them as I read left-leaning stuff as well because it's important. But Shepard Smith coming out with one of the most honest responses I've seen yet, with him saying, why would you do this? Why would you treat us like children? Why would you try to claim that everything we say is false while hiding behind lies? Because I assure you this, there's a lot of stuff we still don't know. This whole Flynn deal, I think, is an iceberg. And I think we're seeing the very, very tip of that with this situation. Where it goes now, we have Republican Senator Roy Blunt saying, we're going to look into this. We're going to have a full investigation. Where is this going to go? I get that conservatives hated Hillary. I get that. But the hinge point of hatred of Hillary was the email scandal, because it seemed to be two things. One, there's dishonesty, and two, there's potential national security at risk. I may be wrong, and I hope I am. I hope I am. But what I fear is a risk of national security and a dishonesty that is deeper, wider, and more egregious than anything that we have seen in an email scandal from an unsecured server that apparently didn't go into anyone's hands, or we'd have heard about it already. That would have been used against Clinton before now. There's plenty of opportunity for that to have happened. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I really, really hope I'm wrong. I can't begin to tell you how much I hope I'm wrong. But then I was challenged by my friend, Father Alan Carter. God bless you. Thank you for your challenges. I mean that sincerely. Well, Pope Francis has been critical of the media, because I said he hadn't been. And I still stand behind that I don't think he has been. To say that, and as media professionals, in the address that he gave in January, the 51st World Communications Day, where he simply said, look, we need to rise above the sensational. We need to rise above essentially the if it bleeds, it leads, which, believe me, that was never an ethic for me. We were never taught that. My education was in real journalism. Op-eds, editorials, absolutely were included. But you disclaimed it, and you made sure that people understood it was opinion. This is a commentary. It always has been. It never has not been. I present a story and I talk about it. I don't present this as though I'm presenting facts and news and reporting on something that's happening. You know my bias. I'm a Catholic. I'm an independent. I'm going to challenge both sides. Sometimes it's going to seem harsher on one side than the other, but you check out my history. I've been pretty darn harsh on both sides, because my one point of focus is human dignity. And if I see human dignity challenged, which, believe me, if an entire industry is challenged, that's undignified. That's what I uphold. That's what I'm going to always stand for, and that's what I'm going to look to correct. Because my faith dictates that. My faith and my discipline of my industry, they both dictate this. To say, you know what, you've got to have this focus. This, to me, is a combination that I cannot help. I cannot help but promote this understanding that ethics are so paramount, and dignity is so paramount, and these two can work together. That's why we do what we do with Breadbox Media. That's why we're here. To present an understanding of what ethical journalism really looks like in a connection to human dignity, which is important to us all. Again, I hope I'm wrong about the other stuff. Time will tell. This is going to come out, but we will see where we are. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. So interesting, this story pops up and then it seems to be refuted by the White House, and then at least AP, I guess, is still out there with the story, but it's also saying, wait a minute, this is not true. The White House is saying that. And that is the authorization of National Guard troops to round up unauthorized immigrants. An 11-page document supposedly coming from the Trump administration somehow leaked, which, again, that's one of the questions. How are things getting leaked? What's getting out? How is this getting to the public? That seemed to be the question that Donald Trump was asking. And I'm fine with asking that question. I think it needs to be asked. If you've got classified information, which seems to be one of the questions or concerns, and it seems to be falling into the hands of the press, well, that is a problem. There's no doubt. That's an internal problem that one needs to resolve, because if you've got truly sensitive information that could jeopardize national security, absolutely. This, to me, could jeopardize national security. Because if it's believed that the National Guard is about to go out and round up illegal immigrants, there could be backlash to that. And that's something you want to carefully watch, I would think. But as Donald Trump said in the news conference, the security issues with leaks is enough of a concern that when dealing, which he says, these are kind of tests of sorts to see what's really happening. What if I'm really dealing with something that's a real consequence, like North Korea? Which, if you've seen the photos there, this was dealt with just as professionally, politically professionally, as anything could possibly be, right at the dinner table, apparently, at the Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida, with other club members watching and taking photos of what was happening with the Japanese prime minister there. A very inappropriate, I would think. Could you not say, guys, we got a security issue here. We probably need to go somewhere else that's not in the public view. Now, you could argue all day long, well, these are my private members. So my club. Yeah, maybe take that to a conference room. That might be the better bet. And say, no cell phones, no texting, turn everything off right now, or check it at the door. Leave it at the door. We're not doing that in here. Even to those, right, who are on your staff, who are on your team. No, nothing leaking out of here. No recording anything. You're not texting. You're not tweeting. You're not doing anything. You're not taking photos. No. No Facebook Live, none of that. None of that happening in here. Leave the phones. You're going to guard the phones outside. Thank you. Rest of you here. Let's talk about this. Would that not be a more appropriate situation if you truly were concerned about national security? But the other bizarre thing, you look at the brother of Kim Jong What am I saying? Kim Jong-il, right? The gentleman who was killed in what apparently was a stunt of all bizarre situations. That Kim Jong-nam, his name, the Korean leader's half-brother, killed in Malaysia, duped into thinking he was on and the assailant thinking she was participating in a television program, a popular TV program where they play stunts on people with hidden cameras. So she doesn't need to see the camera. The cameras are hidden. Nobody needs to know. They just do this. Spray this water on these guys. It'll be funny. Ha ha ha. Not realizing that the dose, a lethal dose of spray, was coming in the way of Kim Jong-nam. Pretty interesting situation here. And I think another warning sign, not so much about discernment of news, which is kind of what we've been talking about, but discernment of even stepping into these situations that people want you to play along. I mean, my goodness, right? This is, wow. Hey, we're going to be over here. We're going to be hiding out because we got the cameras. All you got to do is spray this and it'll be funny. Yeah. You know that TV show. Yeah, the thing that they do, or that YouTube video, you know, that YouTube program where they do that. You've seen them. Yeah. We're doing that. All you got to do is do this. Really? What a perfect crime. These guys could have been gone. Not even. Yeah, we'll be hiding. Just keep doing it. Oh, and when this guy comes, you're going to see him. And yeah, he's the last. You see him over there. Yeah. We'll make sure the last one. Just make sure that's his. Everything's good. They go in and let someone murder someone. How does this happen? And we talk about discernment. We talk about carefully paying attention to the things that we believe, right? We fall prey to twisted ideals. And this one just seems like, yeah, we're just playing along because that's what people do this day and age. Because there are, how many of these prank videos are there? We're at the doctor's office the other day. I don't know what was playing. And it was just like I guess there's a network out there that plays these kind of programs. And that's what it was. It was one trick after another of people just getting duped and just silly things happening. And it was funny. Ha ha ha. Yeah. Back in the day, we remember Candid Camera. That's what started all of this. But to think that it could then one day be a platform for murder. We don't know what we're stepping into at times. So I guess as scripture says, shrewd as serpents, gentle as doves. That's how we negotiate this. That's how we navigate. You know, you don't have to play along with whatever could potentially develop into something of this nature. No. I'm sure there's somebody else to spray the water. But the allure, I mean, think about this. Here's a young girl thinking, I'm going to be on TV. What? I get to be a part of that show? Really? And I get to play that and I'm going to be on the TV? Yes, I'll do that. So there's probably other things. If you found yourself in that situation, release forms, contracts, something that looks official, a camera somewhere that at least you can see. It's crazy. It's nuts to think that this could happen and that someone could be a part of that. Now, and here's my goodness, right? Young Malaysian girl with her life ruined because she was a part of this. Crazy. So a healthy sense of skepticism is good, but to simply think that everything is bad and everyone is bad and everyone is up to no good, there's a balance here, right? This is where virtue comes to play. Because we don't want to be 100% gullible just to accept anything and everything and just assume it's all factual and it's all true. While at the same time, we don't want to be the other side of being so cynical and so skeptical that we can't trust anything. We have to find, and it is a fine line, we have to find that fine line and say, wait a minute, I'm going to be in here. I'm going to be right here. And I'm going to test everything so I can believe something. And I think that is important as well, to say, how do I test this effectively to really understand? To really understand that I've got a responsibility of discernment. And kind of back to what I was saying a moment ago with this story breaking, you know, false reports are not new. As I was saying earlier, I sat in a meeting yesterday talking about what my experience was with September 11th. 2001, right? That's 16 years ago now. And then we didn't have quite the advancement of internet technology where everything we could just immediately, we had to wait for substantiated reports because, believe me, everything was coming like crazy off the wire that day. And when I say the wire, we had a dot matrix printer that just went, just constantly printing story after story after story. And we got some crazy stories. Like, is this real? But no, they were reports, right? They were false reports. They got reported as news, even though they had not been substantiated. So we couldn't report those. That would have been irresponsible. What we had to wait for was substantiated stories to come along because there, you get a lot of stuff. And any news editor has to discern, is this really news? Or is this somebody trying to manipulate me? Or is this just a false report that means nothing? News directorship and news editorial positions aren't to be taken lightly. But then to just assume that we can't trust anyone, everything is fake. Then what do you do? Where do you put your faith? How do you source that? More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Oh, interesting stuff happening. Now with, as I mentioned earlier, it looks like at least one Republican Republican Senator Roy Blunt is coming out saying we're going to have a complete investigation into this whole thing with Flynn. We're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to find out what happened. And now, according to some reports, it looks like Republican Congress in general might be a little bit at odds with some of the things that Trump is proposing. It's kind of what I said. You got this chance, right? Here's your chance. You got the White House. You got the Congress. You could essentially have the judiciary pretty quickly with an appointment in there. And now it's time just to let it all hang out, right? What have you been waiting to do? Repeal all the stuff, which is happening. That's already happening. Enact anything you want. You've got it. Carte blanche. Here's the blank check. You go. But if in that process we end up with infighting, which is what I've predicted from the beginning, because Trump does not necessarily have conservative ideals, nor has he ever. And to see where this is going to go when we actually get into trying to push this stuff forward legislatively, not just executive orders, but actually working with the Congress, that's where it's going to get interesting. Two, I think, of the most beautiful examples of getting things done congressionally and actually even being willing to give the Congress credit. Look at what Bill Clinton was able to do and look at what Ronald Reagan was able to do. Now, I can say that. As an independent, I can give props to both of them. I know most Reagan supporters would spit upon the thought of anything Bill Clinton has ever done as being good. Same is true of Clinton supporters for Reagan. But I look at this, I say, these are two great politicians. Look at what they did. They each, at some point in their presidency, had a Congress that outnumbered them. Reagan with Tip O'Neill and Clinton with Newt Gingrich. And what they were able to do, even with those majority opposition Congresses, was to work with them And the one thing I say about this was certainly true of Reagan. I think that Clinton had a little bit of this, but he wasn't quite, I don't know, as astute, in my opinion, as Reagan was politically. You can argue that. You can argue that because I know Clinton, undoubtedly an amazing politician, he did not keep his nose as clean as Reagan did. Now, you can say, well, there were scandals. Yes, of course there were. But Reagan remained pretty scandal-free. We talk about Clinton being the Mr. Teflon. He had a lot of stuff come his way. It may have rolled off of him, but it was undoubted. We know of his exploitations when it came to his extramarital meanderings. We know that. And that, I think, it didn't necessarily hurt him too badly by his support. It was true of Trump, true of Reagan, true of Clinton. Your base is going to generally hold you dear. They're not necessarily going to abandon you unless you do something really egregiously politically oppositionally. That's the only thing you take. Your personal life, who cares? Who cares? Be the absolute worst SOB in the world. Who cares? Right? If you're doing what you say you're going to do politically, generally speaking, you're going to coddle your base. You're going to keep them close and everything's going to be fine. But I think Reagan came out more unscathed in the long run than, I think there was some reputation damage. It was just reputation damage. That's what I see in Clinton. But both of them, excellent examples. Excellent. Obama, not an excellent example. There are things to admire, undoubtedly, but he was not one to reach across the aisle. He was not one to say, we're going to try to find ways to work together congressionally. He just wanted to keep a dominance in Congress, and that's when he was able to get things done. Look at the Affordable Care Act. Just one of many pieces of legislation passed without any bipartisan support. But you compare that. Go back, look at the Clinton administration, look at the Reagan administration, and see how much bipartisanship actually occurred. It was a lot. And I think that's the true test of a politician. How well do you bring even the opposing sides in? Oh, and what I was going to say about Reagan, famous for listening to anyone. And by listening, seemingly willing to do whatever it is you're suggesting. Oh, well, that's a great idea. Yeah, no, that's terrific. Oh, I love that. And then doing his own thing anyway. Right? So lessons to be learned there. Most of us aren't good at that, listening. We don't want to listen. Don't listen at all. No, certainly not to opposition and not to criticism. We don't want to listen to that. Who wants that? But something about listening, even if in the long run you don't end up doing what the individual is suggesting, just taking the time to listen and affirm, which I think is what Reagan did incredibly, seemingly did incredibly well. I was the age of my oldest son through the Reagan administration, part of the Reagan administration. But I promise you this, I was pretty darn politically aware even then. I was paying close attention. The story I share, 12 pages of notes as a 12-year-old. I just got my notebook out and wrote everything I possibly could, reporting on the assassination attempt of President Reagan. Because I got home and my family was gone, and I turn on the TV and this is happening. And I think, I've got to share this with them. And before I know it, I had 12 pages of notes. That's a 12-year-old, right? Come on. Who does that? Now, my 9-year-old, he doesn't have to take notes because everything is going to be replayed anyway, but I don't think he would be that engaged in anything happening current event-wise that he would want to take copious notes about. But again, now I think the true test is about to begin in a couple of ways, because one, you got a Republican senator saying, we're going to investigate this situation. We're going to get to the bottom of this. What exactly was the connection? What exactly happened in this dynamic of the conversations with the Russian ambassador? What wasn't told to Vice President Pence? How much of this was secretive? Why did it take so long, even after this coming to light within the administration, before something was done? Why did it have to go to the media? Lots of questions. And those questions coming from the majority in Congress, which is now the president's majority. So, you know, we've seen these kind of congressional hearings before. We've seen a lot of digging into trying to get facts, trying to find things out. Generally speaking, nothing comes of it, but we've had impeachments. We've had impeachments. I'm not saying it's going to come to that, but I do believe we've got some interesting compromises, like I said earlier. But even, let's say all that, let's forget about that. Let's just say none of that's happened, even though it has. Let's forget about it. How well is this president going to work with Congress? How well is he going to work with those who oppose him? More importantly, but how well is he going to work with those on his team? Because someone who's used to being in charge and used to being the boss, and used to being able to call any shot he wants any given time and make things happen, and if it doesn't happen, somebody's head is chopped off. That's not how you do this. It's kind of like I said, how do you fire a senator, right? Yeah, you can impeach a senator, right? You could find a way to do that. But when it comes right down to getting rid of somebody who's a thorn in your side in that dynamic, that's not going to happen too easily. Unless they're voted out in 2 years because it appears as though the Congress is completely ineffectual, or this administration, and I know there's buyer's remorse. I've heard of the buyer's remorse. I know it exists in some cases. Which means if there's enough buyer's remorse from an election, there's going to be a midterm change in the Congress. It's happened many, many times. So now's the time, as I've said, the golden opportunity is now. And if you begin with a scandal where your own side is beginning to investigate you and your administration, that to me doesn't look like the way to get anything done, but I know time will tell. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.